Job chapter 34 as we continue. We are in the midst of this younger man, Elihu, who began to speak and said that he had held his peace for a long time. He thought that the other men, because they were older, would be wiser, and he grew angry because of their harshness with Job, although he seems to move to that himself. And he's angry at Job because Job didn't defend God. Job was defending his own righteousness. That's what he says. And he had begun to speak, and we worked our way along with him to the end of chapter 33. And we have come to chapter 34, and Lord willing, we'll get through chapter 37 this evening, so that next Sunday evening we can begin with the things that the Lord has to say finally at the end of this long dialogue. I don't know about you, but it seems long to me. So here we are with Elihu again in chapter 34. It says, furthermore, I'll say, that's a great way to start. Furthermore, Elihu answered and said, hear my words, O ye wise men, give ear unto me, you that have knowledge. And he continually says that. Hear my speeches, be patient, listen to me. He's going to say this over and over again. Each time you hope that he's done, he says it again. Hear my words, O ye wise men, give ear to me, you that have knowledge. For the ear trieth words as the mouth tastes meat. The ear can tell whether a word is bitter or sweet or sour or vindictive. The ear trieth words as the mouth tasteth meat. Let us choose to us judgment. Let us know among ourselves what is good. For Job hath said, I am righteous, and God hath taken away judgment. Now, he hadn't said that exactly, but he's saying that Job has said that he's righteous and God is not just. Should I lie against my right? Quoting Job, my wound is incurable without transgression. God is unjust in that he has let these things come upon me. What man is like Job? A little cynicism, I think, who drinketh up scorning like water. Seems to be his diet. Which goeth in company with the workers of iniquity. And that isn't true. Job hadn't kept company with wicked men. And walketh with wicked men. For he has said, it profiteth a man nothing that he should delight himself in God. He didn't say that either. What he had said was, I've observed, and sometimes it seems that God is dealing with the righteous and the wicked the same. Their argument was that God judges the wicked and rewards the righteous. And Job said, yeah, well, I've seen wicked people live to be old and prosper and flourish. And sometimes it isn't until the end of their life that they have to stand before God and give an account. And he is misquoting Job, saying that God said it doesn't profit a man to delight himself in God. Now look, again, as we go through this, Job did sin in his suffering the way you or I would. The way you or I have. And I doubt whether there's many of us here that, or maybe there isn't any here that have suffered equal to what Job has suffered. 7 sons and 3 daughters, they seem to be grown, stripped away, killed in a day, and I assume that meant with some of them with their spouses. And that's unimaginable to me. I have 4. All of his earthly possessions and savings gone. His health stripped away. Eaten of worms, fever. His 3 best friends turning on him. On top of everything else, the wounds of a friend or faithful. Just their tongue slicing him. And I think most injurious to Job that his perspective of Almighty God is floundering in this. And in that, he has sinned in his suffering. He said, God, this is not fair. And in that, he's accused God indirectly of being unjust. Why are you letting this happen? If the wicked and the righteous experience the same thing, if a man who serves you experiences the same thing sometimes that the wicked suffer, Lord, doesn't it make sense for men to follow you and for you to serve, for them to serve you, Lord? When righteous people who are walking with you find themselves in constant pain and suffering, Lord, it seems that there's something so wrong, and there's kind of an indirect. Now, he has sinned and is suffering, but he has not suffered because he sinned, and those are vastly different. He isn't going through these things because he was a sinner and God's getting him. In fact, God had said he's more righteous than anyone, and there's a spiritual debate behind the scenes, a contest between God and Satan, and Job is on the table, God knowing that he will vindicate Job in the end. But Elihu is misquoting some of these things, but he is Elihu, and God must know that because there's no reproof of Elihu in the end of the book. He must genuinely be standing up for God's reputation. Verse 10 says, "Therefore, hearken unto me, ye men," there he says it again, of understanding, "far be it from God that he should do wickedness, and from the Almighty that he should commit iniquity. For the work of a man shall he render unto him, and cause every man to find according to his ways. Yea, surely God will not do wickedly, neither will the Almighty pervert justice or judgment. Who shall give him a charge over the earth? Or who hath disposed the whole world? If he set his heart upon man, if he gather him to himself, his spirit and his breath, all flesh shall perish together, and man shall turn again to dust." Now, what he's saying is God is just in his judgment. He rewards man according to what he's done. God is not unjust. And yes, God is just. But that's not all that God is. And Elihu doesn't walk in the light that we walk in. God is certainly just, but he is more than just. He is merciful, and he is gracious, and he is loving. And he has not rewarded us according to our iniquities. He has punished his own son, Jesus Christ, for all of our sin. So yes, he is just. But he is more than that. He's sovereign. It says here, interestingly, if he set his heart upon man, verse 14, he could gather to himself his spirit and his breath. If God wanted to reel man in at one instant, he could reel in the entire human race. He could just call in the breath of man. That's it. Sorry I did this. Give me back breath. And every human on the planet would cease to exist. You know, Belshazzar, when he had his drunken party in Babylon, and the handwriting was on the wall, Daniel came in, and his charge against Belshazzar was, "You have not glorified the God in whose hand your breath is." That the spirit of man, the breath of man, in the very hand of God. Isaiah would say, "Thus saith God, the Lord, he that created the heavens and stretch them out, he that spreadeth forth the earth, that which cometh out of it, he that giveth breath unto the people of it, and spirit unto them that walk thereon." It's an interesting thought that God at any moment, if he so desired, could just call in the spirit of every person on the planet and we would just drop inanimate. Remarkable. I'm glad he's my dad. "All flesh would perish together, and man shall turn again to the dust. If now thou hast understanding, hear this. Hearken to the voice of my words. Shall even he that hateth that which is right govern? And will thou condemn him that is most just?" Accusing Job of his accusations against God. "Is it fit to say even to a king, thou art wicked, and to princes, you are ungodly?" That's improper. "How much less to him that accepteth not the persons of princes, nor regards the rich more than the poor? for they all are the work of his hands. And honestly here and truthfully, God has no regard for one man above another. God does not regard the rich above the poor. He doesn't regard any social class above anyone else. God sees man as the work of his hands, and those of us that are accepted in his presence are accepted solely on the basis of the blood of Christ. And every believer in this room is then accepted on equal ground. There isn't anyone here who needed the blood of Jesus more than you did. In a moment shall they die, and the people shall be troubled at midnight and pass away, and the mighty shall be taken away without hand. For his eyes are upon the ways of man, and he seeth all his goings. He says at any minute God can just deal with the wicked. He can just call in their spirit at any moment if he feels like it. There is no darkness nor shadow of death where the workers of iniquity may hide themselves. For he will not lay upon man more than right that he should enter into judgment with God. He's not going to do something unjust with man that man has some reason to accuse God. He shall break in pieces mighty men without number and set others in their place. Therefore he knoweth their works. He overturneth them in the night so that they are destroyed. He striketh them as wicked men in the open sight of others, because they turn back from him and would not consider any of his ways, so that they cause the cry of the poor to come up unto him, and he heareth the cry of the afflicted. And by the way, now he's leaning in the direction of some of the things that Eliphaz and Bildad and Zophar had said when they accused Job of mistreating the poor. When he giveth quietness, who then can make trouble? That's a great plaque, by the way. That's great plaque stuff. You should have that if you tend to worry and be a worry wart. If you're wired that way, this is a great plaque. When he giveth quietness, who then can make trouble? I like that. Most of the time, people that are worry warts think that people are bigger than God. That's why they're worry warts. When he giveth quietness, who then can make trouble? And when he hideth his face, who then can behold him? Whether it be done against a nation or a man only. God is able to do this to a nation. When he gives quietness to a nation, who then can trouble it? When he giveth quietness to an individual, it says whether he does it to a nation or a man. That's why we should pray for our nation. That the hypocrite reign not, lest the people be ensnared. Surely it is meet to be said, is fitting to be said unto God, I have borne chastisement. I will not offend any more. That's fitting. Elihu says, if someone realizes they're under the chastening rod of God, it's fitting for them to say, God, look, okay, I've borne my chastisement. I will not offend any more. That which I see not, teach thou me. If I have done iniquity, I will do it no more. He says, these are fitting things to say to God. Should it be according to thy mind? He will recompense it whether thou refuse or whether thou choose. Not I, therefore speak what thou knowest. He's saying to Job, you think he's going to do it according to your appraisal of these things? Let men of understanding tell me, and let a wise man hearken unto me. Job hath spoken without knowledge. And he's going to repeat this. And his words were without wisdom. My desire is that Job may be tried unto the end because of his answers for the wicked. You know, I desire that Job might be ground all the way to powder to prove what he's saying is not true. Thanks. For he addeth rebellion unto his sin, he clappeth his hands among us, and multiplies his words against God. He says, you know, here's Job to shut us up. He claps his hands so that he can get us to shut up and give God a hard time. Elihu spake moreover and said, thinkest thou this to be right, that thou sayest, my righteousness is more than God's? For thou saidst, what an advantage will it be unto thee, and what profit shall I have if I cleanse my sin? Again, he's saying, you said earlier, Job, that there's no benefit in serving God. Do you think that you are more just than God. Now, I take great consolation in the fact that God is just in the days that we live in. With the threat of nuclear war, with the talk of what might happen between Pakistan and India. On the news last week, they were saying 17 million people could die the first day. And certainly that would be the beginning of the problems. I think each side having over 50 nuclear weapons. And you know, the insanity of it is there's no human rights there. There's no, you can't find a dentist, but we have nuclear weapons. Insane. Seems like far away. The Air Force did a study years ago and determined that if 40 nuclear weapons were detonated, that it would knock the Earth off its axis and thus to cause tidal waves, earthquakes all over the world. It's not that far away. This ball of dirt is not that big. But I believe that God is just. If God would not judge Sodom and Gomorrah if there were five righteous in it, I don't believe that we can see an all-out nuclear war until the rapture's taken place. I don't believe that we can see major metropolitan area after major metropolitan area incinerated and God allowing the righteous to be burned up with the wicked, because he is just. And Genesis 18 talks about it. I'm glad that he is just, that he is righteous. And Elihu, evidently in sincerity, is worried about God's reputation, though he is accusing Job wrongly in regards to some things. I will answer thee and thy companions with thee. Look unto the heavens and see, and behold the clouds which are higher than you. If thou sinnest, what doest thou against him? Or if thy transgressions be multiplied, what doest thou to him? If thou be righteous, what givest thou him? Or what receiveth he of thine hand? Now look, there is a truth in this, and there is an error in this. Look unto the heavens. Yes, they're higher. And behold the clouds which are higher than you. If you sin, what doest thou against him? Or if thy transgressions be multiplied, what doest thou unto him? Look, for you and I, that is only a partial truth. Any parent here who has had a prodigal knows the heartache of what a child sinning, going the way of the world, the heartache of that in the home, of wondering every night if there's going to be a phone call from the police or an auto accident. And Jesus, when he talks about the parable of the prodigal son, the parable of the older brother there, talks about the father watching, waiting, looking, recognizing the gait of his son coming from a distance, running, throwing his arms around him, embracing him and kissing him. And the truth of the matter is that you and I do have an effect, oh, not on mankind, not on God's ultimate plan, but certainly on the heart of our Father that is in heaven. And Elihu knew nothing of this. He knew nothing of it. We do touch the heart of our Father. Again, so many times Jesus would say, if you love me, keep my commandments. If you love me, keep my words. He that keepeth not my sayings loveth me not. In fact, the only place in the Gospels that Jesus talked about his own love to the Father, he said, in this, I want the world to know that I love the Father, that as he has commanded me, so do I. Jesus doesn't ask us for anything that he hasn't given himself. He said his love is demonstrated to the world. His love for God is demonstrated to the world in that he kept the commandment the Father had given him to do in regards to going to the cross, obedience. But there's love contained in that. Isn't it interesting? We talk an awful lot about our love for God. Jesus only talked about it once. Many times talked about the love of the Father for us. Many times talked about the love of the Father for him. But if there's bragging rights, they should belong to him. There's only one time when he talked about his love for the Father. And it was in a context of keeping the commandment the Father had given him. And in that, the world would know that he loved the Father. If we love him, keep his commandments. If we sin as his children, it grieves his heart. And it does. If thou sinnest, what doest thou against him? Elihu speaking in the light that he had. Or if thy transgressions be multiplied, what doest thou to him? If thou be righteous, what givest thou to him? Or what receiveth? What does he receive of your hand? Thy wickedness may hurt a man, as thou art. Thy righteousness may profit the son of man. By reason of the multitude of oppressions, they make the oppressed to cry. And they cry out by reason of the arm of the mighty. Not for the love of God, but they cry out in that there's injustice. And look, interesting, but none saith, where is God my maker who giveth songs in the night? We talked about this morning. And people forget to look to God, who's the one who gives songs in the night, in the dark time. So many writing, you know, the great hymns that have been written, whether it's Amazing Grace or Take My Life and Let It Be. So many written by those that were blind and those that were afflicted and those that were in a dark place. He gives us songs in the night. Who teaches us more than the beasts of the earth and maketh us wiser than the fowls of heaven. Man placed above the beasts of the earth. They follow their migratory patterns. There's genius demonstrated in their lives. But there's not a cow standing in the field saying to another cow, what's life all about anyway? What's the purpose of this? You're born, you mature, you give milk, and you die. There's not a beast that is concerned about anything beyond mooing and chewing cud. We have a remarkable difference between the beast and man. You know, though there's tree huggers out there all worried about their rights. I'll stop and move on. There they cry, but none giveth answer, because of the pride of evil men. Surely God will not hear vanity, neither will the Almighty regard it. Although thou sayest, thou shalt not see him, yet judgment is before him. Therefore trust thou in him. But now, because it is not so, he, God, hath visited in his anger. Yet he, evidently Job, knoweth it not in great extremity. You know, Job, God is dealing with you in his anger, and you in your extremity don't even recognize what's going on. Therefore doth Job open his mouth in vain. He multiplieth words without knowledge. Now, when we come to chapter 38 and God begins to speak in verse 2, God says, who is this that darkeneth counsel by words without knowledge? Well, our question will be when we get there, is he speaking of Job or Elihu? But he says here, Job is speaking words without knowledge. Elihu also proceeded and said, suffer me a little, and I will show thee what I have yet to speak. Ah, man, I thought he was done. On God's behalf. Suffer me, just be patient. I've got something to say, and I'm speaking on behalf of God. I get those. Several times a year, people speaking to me on behalf of God. Sometimes maybe they are. I don't just discard that. We get a lot of letters. Think the church is great. Think the worship's great. Think you're a great teacher. But, and as that starts, I flip it over and see if there's a signature. If there's no signature, I throw it out. As if someone's not courageous enough to state their opinion and sign their name so that I can call them back or answer them, why read it? Once in a while I get this letter, thus saith the Lord, you know, the bond slave of so-and-so, you know, speaketh unto thee. And they write to me in King James, and it sounds like, you know, the introduction to Galatians or something. I'm worried already. Sometimes I have people, and you probably have this too, you know, you have somebody come up, and I've had that with most any time I travel, someone will come and say, I had a dream, I saw the plane exploding fire, and I'm thinking, oh, great, you know, that's what I need. I don't like flying anyway, And then, you know, you think, well, the gift of prophecy is to edify, that's what Paul says, and I'm not very edified by this. And I put it in the category of pepperoni prophecy. They, you know, was eating a little too much before they went to bed. Of course, then you do sit at the airport and look around at everybody getting on your flight thinking, does this look like a group God could do without? That's just my neurosis. I'm going to speak to you on God's behalf. You know, it's funny, the last time we had a prophet here, he came after we got a restraining order. He came to prophesy against me on a Wednesday night. It was the first Wednesday night in 2 years I wasn't here. So all he could do was prophesy against Jerry in proxy. They had to drag him out. That's a long story. I will fetch my knowledge from afar. And I will ascribe righteousness to my Maker. For truly my words shall not be false. A little puffed up, but not false. He that is perfect in knowledge is with thee. Now I have to believe Elihu speaking of God here, because he's gone a little too deep if he's still speaking about himself. He that is perfect in knowledge is with thee. Behold, God is mighty. And despiseth not any. He is mighty in strength and wisdom. He preserveth not the life of the wicked, but giveth right to the poor. He withdraweth not his eyes from the righteous, but with kings are they on the throne. He sees what world rulers are doing, kings on the throne. Yea, He doth establish them forever, they are exalted. Now he's talking about those that are righteous. And if they be bound in fetters, as Job was to his illness and so forth, and beholden in the cords of affliction, then he, God, showeth them their work and their transgressions that they have exceeded. He openeth also their ear to discipline and commandeth that they return from iniquity. Now what he's doing different than Eliphaz, Zophar, and Bildad, is he saying here that God's judgment is not always punishment? That if a righteous man is in error and sins, that God's chastening rod comes often in a corrective way or in an instructive way, and that it isn't necessarily true that Job is as sinful as the others had accused him of being. He commandeth that they return from iniquity. God does this in our lives, the chastening of the Lord. It's not pleasant, but it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness. If we don't have chastening, if we call ourselves a Christian and we continue to live in sexual sin, we continue to take drugs, we continue to be out living in the world, we continue to be carnal, and God's rod does not come down on us, then we need to take some serious thought. Paul says, let a man examine himself to see whether he's in the faith. Because one of the demonstrations of God's love for his children is if they live in sin, that he chastens them. He chastens the son that he loves. If they obey and serve him, they shall spend their days in prosperity and their years in pleasures. Not necessarily so. We just saw that missionary killed in the Philippines. His wife escaped, but someone who gave their entire life to serve Christ was put to death. So he's going back to some of the philosophy of the other three. But if they obey not, they shall perish by the sword and shall die without knowledge. But the hypocrites in heart heap up wrath. They cry not when he bindeth them. They die in youth. That's not always true. And their life is among the unclean, or the sodomites here. They don't always die in their youth. There are wicked men who go on for many years, and Job had taken issue with that. He delivereth the poor in his affliction, and openeth their ears in oppression. I mean, a man older man in an accident one day, drunk out in front of the church. Sideswiped a few of the cars of the folks that came here. Those folks, whoever they were, and I don't know who they were so gracious to him. And he was drunk. He couldn't believe it. Then he went home and he came back the next week. He sat in here and he got saved. And he had been a man who had been an enforcer, who had been mean-spirited and just plain mean. His wife hated him, his grandkids hated him, his kids didn't like him. He gave his life to Christ, went and asked her forgiveness, asked the forgiveness of his kids, made up with his grandchildren, and died of a heart attack. Because some of you had your car sideswiped and it was not an idol, and were gracious. And a man who had been sinful and wicked and mean his whole life gave his life to Christ and died and went to heaven, made peace before he did. They die in their youth. That's not always true. He delivereth the poor in his affliction and openeth their ears in oppression. Even so would he have removed thee out of the strait, the narrow place you're squeezed in, into a broad place where there is no straightness, no narrowness. You know, sometimes you feel like you're being squeezed, that you're under so much pressure. And that which should be set on thy table should be full of fatness. If you, Job, would have turned, if you would have yielded under this, God would have taken you out from all of the pressure you're under and set you in a broad place. But thou hast fulfilled the judgment of the wicked. Judgment and justice take hold on thee, because there is wrath. Beware, lest he take thee away with his stroke. Then a great ransom cannot deliver thee. What will man give for his life? Jesus said. Will he esteem thy riches? God doesn't care for what you're worth in gold. No, not gold, or the forces of strength. Desire not the night when people are cut off in their place. Job had said he had wished to die. Curse the day he was born. Why didn't I die before I came out of my mother's womb? Desire not the night when people are cut off in their place. Take heed. Regard not iniquity. For this hast thou chosen rather than affliction. Now, we come to this next passage to chapter 38, and I think it's one of the most remarkable parts of this entire argument. And for those of you who are not here this morning, Elihu's going to do this. He's going to say that God is a master teacher, and he's going to break into an elaborate description of evaporation and condensation and lightning and thunder and rain and the hydro system. And he's going to say to Job in a veiled way, in a very interesting way, look, there are storms, Job, that rage in the natural. They don't do that without the moral government of God. The hydro system, 330 cubical million miles of ocean, 1.5 trillion tons of rain falling on the earth every day, too much lightning to number the strikes, ionizing the air, taking the rain from molecules into small particles until the clouds can't bear up under the updrafts, and the whole remarkable, complex, genius process has been put in place not because God likes lightning shows. The whole system has been put in place because God loves man. The whole system has been put in place to sustain life. I know they're talking about water on Mars. Believe it when you drink it. You know, I know that the Hubble's out there and they're telling us that, you know, there must be millions of other solar systems around other stars and other galaxies, and we got space brothers out there somewhere, and, you know, I want to taste some space food if that's true and see what they're eating. But truth is, there's not one shred of hard evidence that there is another solar system in the universe. Truth is, there's not a shred of real evidence that there is another planet in the 20 billion light years of space that has a hydro system and sustains life. Truth is that they see a light warble, or, you know, they quantify a particular kind of light and see a wobble around a star, and then say, therefore, there must be planets revolving, or there must be a gravitational force to make that light wobble like that. But they have not, with Hubble and any of these things, come up with a photograph of another solar system anywhere in the expanse of the universe. The complexity and the genius of the hydro system here is for man. Not just because God is a tree hugger and loves nature. All of it for us. So, in that hydro system, he's going to say, look, sometimes God uses the storms in nature to bring judgment, sometimes to bless. God is moral in these things. They don't rage by themselves without his moral control. It says sometimes they're corrective. Sometimes it's a rod that God may bring on a nation or a people. Even during the millennium, we read in the end of Zechariah that those who refuse to come and worship the Lord in the feast that he still maintains, that there will be no rain there, that will be drought there. So it says this hydro system, this rain and storm and lightning and wind and tornado is all under the hand of God. And if that's true, Elihu's going to say, in the natural, then the storms of life that blow over us, morally, emotionally, mentally, Job, then they also must be under the moral government of God. The problem is, he's going to say, man forgets his maker, the one who gives songs in the night. Man does not look beyond the clouds and remember that on the other side of the darkened sky, the sun is still shining. We tend to, all of us, me included, look so often on the dark side of things. But his last reproof to Job will be, Job, yes, the storms of life are moving over you, but God is speaking in those things. And then all of a sudden, as this whirlwind comes, God will begin to speak out of it. Let's look what he says here in verse 22. Behold, God exalteth by his power. God is the one who exalts. Who teaches like him? He's the master teacher, isn't he? Warren Wiersbe said the best teacher is the person who can turn your ears into eyes. God making the Passover feast mandatory for the nation, that they would gather their children and they would take the bitter herbs to remind them of the bitter bondage in Egypt, that they would take the salty water to remind them of the tears, that they would take the lamb, that they would sit with their children and explain, this is what this is for, this is what this is for. Our God delivered us out of Egypt by the blood of the lamb. God, a master teacher in the feast. Jesus, a master teacher. Consider the sparrows. Consider the lilies. Laying before them parables when they refused to hear simple truth. A sower went forth to sow. Who teacheth like him? Who hath enjoined him his way? Who prescribes God the way that he should take? Verse 23. Or who can say, thou hast wrought iniquity? Who can say, God, what you're doing is wrong? He's saying to Job, no one can say that to him, Job. Yes, there are storms of life are passing over you, but who can say to God, you're wrong? Remember that thou magnify his work, which men, and it's sad, King James says, behold, it should say, which men have sung of. There's something here of a song, that men have sung of the wondrous works of God, songs. Every man may see it, man may behold it afar off. Behold, God is great, and we know him not. The idea is, yes, God is great, he's also infinite. In heaven, when the cherubim look up and see him, they fall down on their faces again and say, Holy, 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 Lord, Lord God Almighty, was and is to come. Every time they look up, they see a facet of him they've never seen before. Who can know him in that sense? He's infinite. Neither can the number of his years be searched out. God is eternal. Now, he's going to say something. If you turn over to 37 here, verses 13 and 14, he says, he, God, causes it, the storm, to come, whether for correction or for the land or to show his steadfast love, for mercy. Hearken unto this, O Job. Stand still. Consider the wondrous works of God. Who teaches like him? Now back to verse 27 and 36. Look what he begins to say. For he maketh small the drops of water. They pour down rain according to the vapor thereof. Amazing, knowing what meteorologists have only discovered this century. Which the clouds do drop and distill upon man abundantly. And evidently there's a storm forming as they speak. Also, can any understand the spreadings of the clouds? Or the noise of his tabernacle, the thunder, as probably it was beginning to rumble as the storm may have been coming towards them. Behold, he spreadeth his lightning upon it, and covereth the bottom, the depths of the sea, this entire hydro system. For by them judgeth he the people, and he giveth meat in abundance. There isn't an impersonal aspect to the powers of nature. By them God judges people, and he also gives meat in abundance. The rain causes the crops to bear. With clouds he covereth the light and commandeth it not to shine by the cloud that comes between. There's a very interesting phrase in the Hebrew about the lightning dancing here in the hand of God, that he brings the clouds, he causes it to be overcast, and they stand between the light that's above and man who's beneath, where the sun and the lightning are not seen, and he's overcast in the clouds. The noise thereof, the lightning, showeth concerning it. There are storm warnings. The cattle also concerning the labor. The cows know when it's coming. They sense. At this also my heart trembleth and is moved out of its place. Hear attentively the noise of his voice and the sound that goeth out of his mouth. He directeth it under the whole heaven and his lightning unto the ends of the earth. After it a voice roareth. Now isn't it interesting? He recognizes that light travels faster than sound here. The lightnings unto the ends of the earth, and after it a voice roareth. He thundereth with the voice of his excellency, and he will not stay them with when his voice is heard. God thundereth marvelously with his voice. Great things doeth he, which we cannot comprehend. Now what he's saying here is he's saying, Job, storms of life are passing over you. There's stuff that God does we can't fully comprehend. Rather than judging him, we need to worship him. We need to trust him. Listen to the thunder as it rolls in. I don't know about you, but when we get some big booming thunderstorm in the summer, it blows my mind. When my whole house rumbles and the windows rattle because of thunder, in my heart, I go, whoa. If you have the gift of interpretation, you understand that. And it speaks of God's majesty and of his power and of his glory and of his excellency. This isn't anything new. Elihu said, the storm, Job, is speaking. It preaches its own sermon. Solomon, the wisest man again that ever lived, would say, consider the ant, thou sluggard, who brings in his food in season. He understands what's ahead. He takes heed to it. He prepares. And human beings not taking heed to what is ahead. Or Jesus saying, consider the lilies of the field. Solomon in all of his glory is not arrayed like one of these. If the grass which is here today and tomorrow is cast into the oven is so arrayed, you know, that we shouldn't worry about what we're going to put on or what we're going to eat, the sparrows of the field. Jesus said there are sermons in those things. They're speaking. They're telling us something. The sparrows, they don't sow, they don't reap, they don't gather in the barns, and yet your Father in heaven feeds them. If your Father so cares for the sparrow of the field, how much more will he care for you, of you a little faith? Psalm 19, the heavens declare the glory of the Lord, the earth showeth forth his handiwork. Night after night they utter their speech. There isn't a language in the earth where their language is not heard and understood, that there's something of God's glory spoken to us. Romans 1 tells us his eternal powers Godhead has shown forth in creation, that in these things. But he's saying, Job, stand still. Consider. You're complaining that in your life there's been tremendous injustice, but here comes this storm rolling in, shaking the ground, rumbling, the wind blowing, the lightning crashing, tornadoes. And that is not without God's moral involvement. It's a blessing to some, it's judgment to others. Job, listen to God. For he saith to the snow, verse 6, be thou on the earth, likewise to the small rain, the mist, and to the great rain that brings floods of his strength. He sealeth up the hand of every man, that all men may know his work. In other words, the winter comes in that day, if there was a snowstorm or a blizzard, you went and you sat inside. And again, in those days, when you sat inside, you sat inside. No video games, no telephones, no fax machines, no ESPN, no playoffs, nothing. You sat inside and you looked out the crack in your door. Probably didn't even have a window. And you looked at each other by the fireplace. And you talked. And you considered the ways of God. He sealeth up the hand of every man, that all men may know his work. With the snow, he's going to tell us in the next chapter, he considered the storehouses of snow I've stored up for the last day. Then the beasts, they go into their dens, hibernation, they remain in their places. Out of the south, now it's an interesting, out of his chamber cometh the whirlwind. There's something here that speaks of the south. And the cold out of the north, and the cold air mass, meaning that hot air mass, so often that's when this tornadic activity is born. And somehow that reflects sometimes the things that go on in our life, doesn't it? There seems to be from the hand of God both a warmth and a cold wind sometimes that blows. And it creates turmoil in our thoughts and our hearts. Out of the south cometh the whirlwind, the cold wind out of the north. By the breath of God frost is given. And the breath of the waters, the wide rivers, are frozen, straightened. Also by watering he wearieth the thick cloud. He scattereth his bright cloud with the lightning and the condensation. And it is turned round about by his counsels, that they may do whatsoever he commandeth. In other words, it's not without his involvement. Whatever he commandeth them to do on the face of the world in the earth, he causes it to come, the storm. Whether for correction, there are storms of correction, there are storms of instruction. Job was in a storm of correction. I mean, Jonah, storm of correction. The disciples on the Sea of Galilee, storm of instruction. They weren't being corrected, they weren't being punished. They were right where God wanted them. There are storms of instruction. There are storms of correction. And there are storms that are chastening God. It's, in fact, the word here is storms for the rod. That happens sometimes. I can do without those. Don't feel picked on if there's a storm in your life. Again, we see them in the life of Joseph in Egypt, the life of Moses in the backside of the desert, the life of David, the storms of God, and the life of Daniel, carried away as a young junior high kid to Babylon and then thrown into the lion's den, the storms of life forming the man. We see them in the life of Paul, seeking God for 14 years, that the thorn in the flesh would be taken, the messenger that was buffeting him from Satan, God saying, my grace is sufficient, Paul, to keep you from being puffed up about the revelations you have. There are storms for correction, sometimes just for the land to bless, and sometimes for mercy, a demonstration of his steadfast love, no doubt unearned, undeserved mercy. Hearken unto this, O Job. Stand still and consider the wondrous works of God. Dost thou know when God disposed them and caused the light of his cloud to shine? Do you know that how God is doing all this, how the lightning, you know, the ionizes the air, all of this intricacy and beauty and genius that takes place? Dost thou know the balancing of the clouds? We've just discovered that this century. The wondrous works of him which is perfect in knowledge. How thy garments then, Job, are warm when he quieteth the earth by the south wind. Job, how after the storm's over, the south wind blows and dries out your clothes. Hast thou with him spread out the sky, which is strong, and sometimes it looks like a mirror, a molten looking glass. Sometimes the heavens just seem to be glass. Teach us, Job, what we shall say to him. For we cannot order our speech by reason of darkness. We lack understanding. Shall it be told him that I speak? So should someone tell God I've got something to say to him? Hey, by the way, if you see God, tell him I got a bone to pick with him, will you? If a man speak, surely he shall be swallowed up. And now, men see not the bright light which is in the clouds. But the wind passeth and cleanseth them. Problem, men tend to look at the dark side of a situation. When their life seems to be overcast, they don't see the light beyond the cloud. They forget that the Lord said, he's always with us. He'll never leave us or forsake us. He's with us always, even to the end of the age. That in the dark times, the sun is still shining on the other side of that cloud bank. The heavens remain. Job says, the problem, man seeth not the bright light which is in the clouds. But the wind, that cold wind and the storms in our life is the very thing that passes and it cleanses them. It cleanses the sky. You know what it's like after a storm? The next day you get up and the sky is blue and it seems so clean. It seems to be so cleansed. Fair weather, verse 22. Now, that phrase is used over 175 times in the Old Testament. Every other place is translated gold, golden, golden splendor, your translation might say. Fair weather, golden splendor cometh out of the north with God in his terrible majesty. When the storm is past, maybe speaking of the sun, maybe speaking of something divine here, I don't know. Touching the Almighty, we cannot find him out. Not by searching, but he has come and revealed himself in the presence and in the person of Jesus Christ. He is excellent in power and in judgment and plenteous of justice. He's just in everything he does. He will not afflict, the idea is then unjustly, contrasting that he is plenteous in justice. Men do therefore fear him. He respecteth not any that are wise at heart. It doesn't matter how wise human beings are. It doesn't impress God then. The Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind. Finally. Praise the Lord. Yes, I know. I agree. Hey, those of you who have endured, when you see Job in heaven, you're going to be able to say, I read your book. A little dry in places, but that may not be too far in the future.